Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone. Joe Bannister here. Let's do first fruits. We like to pray the Our Father to begin our show. Can't do anything without God's blessings. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen.
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 All right. Well, I am not dressed for the occasion. I had to help a family member. Just have to leave it at that. So I'm not dressed. I don't have my lighting correct. I might fade out by the end of the show. You won't even be able to see me anymore because I got natural light going on here. But thankfully, I've got co-hosts who are always at the ready. They always have their powder dry. And so we're going to start with Sean making a little brief presentation. Then he's going to hand it off to Gary. And then Sean and Gary are going to kind of tag team it through the show. And we'll try to do a Q&A portion of the show as well. So welcome, everybody. And Sean, take it away.
Thank you, Joe. Good evening, everyone. We're going to go a little off track tonight. Not too far, but a little bit. Because there are a lot of important things we think you need to know. One thing we'd like you all to know is that the income tax, though it is the main issue of everything that we talk about, because what this country does to the people, what the government does to the citizens today, they can't do it without money. And they sure can't do it without our support, which means they do it with our money. But there are other things, too, that we're also interested in. We're interested in the Constitution. Trust me on that. And the amendments to the Constitution, the Articles, the Bill of Rights, they're very important. And one of the most important, which allows us to be here tonight talking to you, is the First Amendment. And that is sacrosanct. I mean, it's the most important right and obvious to everyone. It would be. It's the First Amendment, the first one they put in, the first article, excuse me. There's a book out that was written here a while back. You may have heard of it. You may not have, by Mark Levin, called On Freedom of the Press. For you that haven't seen it, that's what it looks like. I don't endorse books, that's not what I do, but if you want to learn about what has happened with the First Amendment and the press and how they shape the way the people's minds think about the government and the government officials they elect, this is a very important book. Pick it up. It's a great gift for somebody when Christmas comes or a birthday. It's well worth the read. The First Amendment, like I said, we wouldn't be here tonight if it wasn't there. It's very, very important. And it's not so much the government anymore nowadays, folks, that don't like the First Amendment. It's your bleeding heart liberals and the press. They have an idea of the First Amendment. The idea of their First Amendment is, I can say anything I want and you must agree. And you can say anything you want as long as I like it. So I suggest you pick up his book and find out what's happening to the First Amendment and how the press is trying to shape how the people look at the government. In other words, don't trust the press. We were supposed to be able to. They were supposed to keep the government in check by telling the people what was going on in our free government that has to, or our free country that, and a government that has to answer to the people. Government is starting to answer to the press. The press is actually controlling the government. I don't think it's the other way around, the government controlling the press. Nevertheless, the other book I'd like to talk about briefly is Joe Bannister's second book. His first book was called Investigating the Federal Income Tax, A Preliminary Report. He's written another one called Investigating the Federal Income Tax, scratched out preliminary report and says, Report to the American People. I'd like to hold it up so you can all view it. I highly recommend that you get this book also. This is written by Joe Bannister, very influential person. I've read his books and they're spot on. If you want to know more about the income tax, how the government will react when you dare question them, this is an excellent book. Not only does it take you through the trials and tribulations of some of Joe's experiences, but it gives you an eye opener as far as what the income tax is and how the government will do anything they can to enforce it in any manner they choose, whether it's correct or not. Anyway, with all that being said, I said at the beginning, we have a show that's a little bit offbeat tonight. We're going to be talking about legal research, how to perform it, how to understand it, why it's necessary that you learn how to do legal research. Way back when, prior to the War for Independence, Revolutionary War, as you may want to call it, what bothered the British, especially in their parliament, was not so much the Americans, their colonists, but what they knew. And the parliament, in one of their meetings, sat down and said, you know what the problem with Americans are, is every one of them have a little bit of knowledge of the law, and that just isn't good. Well, it turns out that for them, they were right. The law is important, and that is why tonight we're going to be discussing how to perform legal research, how to read it, why you do it. And once you start doing it, become accustomed to it, you're going to find out there's no magic here. There's no special language. There are terms and terminology that you will learn. It won't be hard, because once you start doing it, you'll find that you want to learn this terminology and how this legal, so-called legalese works. But trust me on this, it's not magic. If it was, I wouldn't be here, because I don't understand magic. Anyway, tonight I'd like to introduce our first speaker, and I believe you all know him, Gary Thomason, and he's going to kick us off with the various aspects of legal research and why it is so very important that everyone here learn how to perform it and learn at least a smattering of the law. Gary.
Thank you, Sean. Good evening, everybody. I want to start off with a quote from the Ninth Circuit. It's the Nutty Ninth, as President Trump refers to him. But the quote is from a case called Voss versus Commissioner. And the reason why I think it's so important is they tell us exactly what the whole system is all about in terms of definitions. And the judge in the case said that there's a particular section in the code he was talking about, I think it was 163, and he said this section, much like all the sections in the Internal Revenue Code, have definitions within definitions and inferences upon inferences. And if we read a passage from a court case, and we believe that one word that we're reading means a certain thing, like if they're talking about a section in the code such as individual, and say every individual, blah blah blah, and we interpret an individual to be me, you, and your family members, your best friends, everybody in the United States is an individual. And you would be correct in that there's no one else like us, so we're an individual. And for purposes of, say, a particular section of the Internal Revenue Code, or in a decision or in an argument, you know, that individual did this might be very true. But when you get inside the Internal Revenue Code, you're going to be looking at words that have a common everyday meaning many, many times. But there's also going to be that very same word that has a very special, very definite legal meaning. And to kind of give you an idea, when you look at the word individual, and I'll just make a reference to a regulation. I got a message from someone that said they didn't get the link. The word individual is in the very, very first section of the Internal Revenue Code. So if you look at the definition of individual and you read that very first section, it says tax on individuals. Now, if you take that definition, an individual is like a single person. There's no one else like you, no one else like me. it's just one, an individual slice of bread, is one slice of bread. But in the code, an individual means something totally different. So as we start this adventure into the definitions and the words, we're looking at a code that's written. And the reason why they say code is because there's going to be the code within the code. It's almost like a sign language. But don't ever be disappointed. Don't ever be discouraged, because the words are going to be defined. And if you look up the words, and if you get something, you're stuck on something, the code is available online and it's searchable. And so if there's a word individual, you'll notice that, and to me, in all honesty, it is the most critical word in the code, because section one of the code imposes a tax on individuals. And so we talked about it briefly last week. 1.1-1A says the code imposes a tax on the income of every individual who is a citizen or resident of the United States, and to the extent provided in 871B and 877B, the income of a non-resident alien individual. So the code imposes a tax on every individual who's a citizen, every individual who is a resident, and every non-resident alien individual. Only three individuals. The big question, the question of all time, that will be either dragging you in or dragging you out, is, for federal income tax purposes, are you an individual? So when you start your research into the Internal Revenue Code, I would say start with Subtitle A, because that's the income tax. Subtitle B, unless you're dealing with gift and estate taxes, don't spend all your time there. Spend your time in Subtitle A. Subtitle C is the employment taxes, and it's taken many, many years to really understand it and really get a good grip on it. But Subtitle C, employment taxes, basically is Subtitle A jumbled up again. And so, and if you read 3402, the section 3402 of the Internal Revenue Code over in Subtitle C, you'll see that it says tax, withholding of tax, withholding of the income tax on wages. Well, income tax is in Subtitle A, wages are in Subtitle C. So they use a Subtitle C term to describe a Subtitle A tax. And if that's confusing to you, don't give up, because it's intended to be that way. It's taken years to sort it out, and we want to make it a little bit shorter for you. And instead of spending 12 years looking up the difference between an individual and an employee, for example, or an individual who is, as opposed to an individual who is a citizen is not the same as a citizen. Let me just say that much. So Subtitle A, it takes up half of the Internal Revenue Code, in essence. So when you're looking through Subtitle A, you have four chapters that are critical in terms of at least understanding how it flows. Chapter one deals with all the income tax provisions. Chapter two are special provisions within the income tax. Chapter three is the withholding, and that's the one you really want to focus on. I'll give you these pointers. You read section chapter one, it's really not a whole lot of importance in there if you're talking about you as an American citizen performing services for a company, or if you're performing services for yourself. It's going to be over in Subtitle A, Chapter 3, is a good place to start. It's going to save you a lot of years. But so if you're looking in subtitle A, chapter 3, like I say, there's where you're going to find the meat and potatoes. Another subtitle is F, and that's the procedure and administration. And excuse me for jumping around, but I just want to touch on subtitle A and subtitle C to say this is subtitle A and subtitle C are basically the same, except for one thing. They use different words, and they're defined very specifically. Subtitle F is where you're going to find the procedure and the administration. There's so many things in it, but there's a chapter in subtitle F, chapter 61 of the code, that has everything to do with information reporting. And what is an information return? You would think that that's being the most important thing that you fill out if you've been filling out a 1040 for the last, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. There's not a definition of an information return. Why? An information return, if you drill down, a 1040 is an information return. A 1042 is an information return. A 1099 is an information return. A W-2 is an information return. So they just lump all of these characters, all these documents, into information returns. And then once we kind of just take an overview of the Internal Revenue Code, there's going to be other third authorities such as the Internal Revenue Manual, the Code of Federal Regulations, the Internal Revenue Bulletins, the revenue rulings. I mean, there's all these resources out there. And as you continue to join in with us each week, you're going to be able to find out where those are located, how you could find them, What relevancy do they have to your particular situation? So when we talk about the ancillary documents, other than the code and the federal regulations, the Federal Register, and all the Internal Revenue Bulletins and things of that nature, those are practical applications of and resources that you use every single day. Most of this information is online today. You can just do a word search. Hit your favorite word search. Probably start page is what I'd recommend. But go to start page and do a search for Federal Code of Federal Regulations, Title 26. You want to look for the Internal Revenue Bulletins. You can go to the GPO and find all the government issued, and they put the little GPO label up there to show that it's for real. Joe's given us an example of the Code of Federal Regulations, and it's over in GovInfo. These are the latest publications. They have them for 2019 all the way back. And as you, if you say, for example, if you get a letter, and this will be something that's fairly important, but it's often overlooked. Say, for example, John Doe gets a letter from the IRS, and it's dealing with the 2005 calendar year. If he goes to the 2019 Code of Federal Regulations and quotes from that, what was available to him in 2005 is not going to always be the same that's going to be in 2019. The general provisions, generally speaking, yes, it will be the same, but there's going to be amendments all throughout the years. Every year, there's going to be these amendments to them. There's going to be deletions. There's going to be omissions, and everything else. So when you open up the part one. Joe, that'd be good. And let's just click on subchapter A in part one. And start at 1.0. This is the flow chart of how you would typically go through and find a section. And I was just talking about section 1.1-1. So when Joe clicks on the PDF, and it's done by pages, there's your 1.01, and then you can see we can scroll down to the next page. There it is, 1.1-1. This is what I was quoting just a few minutes ago. This is where you'll find it. You'll find it in the Code of Federal Regulations. And there's the actual quote by the Secretary of the Treasury. And this was in effect during 2005. Now, it hasn't changed, so it's not going to be a problem. But 1.1-1A is where you find the heading that says tax on individuals. There it is. And so the tax on individuals, and this is like I may have said it before, but you have old friends that you were neighbors, golfing buddies. Well, I had an old neighbor that was a golfing buddy, and he and I used to sit around after playing a round of golf, and he'd tell some old story back when he was in the timeshare and hotel business. And one time he just turned and looked me right in the eyes, and he says, "You know what, Gary? I'll never lie to you, but you better listen very carefully." And I just busted a gut laughing. Well, this is what the Treasury Department is saying. This is what Congress is saying to us. And so when you read that tax on individuals, you know, let's just kind of venture, and this will be your first lesson in understanding why words have a very important role in your understanding. Section 1 of the code imposes an income tax on the income of every individual who is a citizen or resident of the United States. There's two characters there, an individual who's a citizen, an individual who's a resident. And then it says, and to the extent provided in 871B or 877B, the income of a non-resident alien individuals. So right there in the very first section of the Treasury regulations, the Secretary of the Treasury is they're telling each and every one of us that income tax is imposed on every individual who's a citizen, every individual who's a resident, and every non-resident alien individual. It's only three. The question is, and this is the question you should be asking yourself, because it's a question I ask, it is, am I an individual who's a citizen? Well, you go over to the Title Y definitions in Subtitle F. It's 7701. A1 is the definition of a person. And this is how easy to search. There's Joe's typing in 7701A1, and here are all the links to it. There's the definitions. Click on it, open it up, and there's 7701A. Joe, Cassandra's trying to get in the meeting. She just messaged me. So 7701A1 is the definition of a person. persons shall mean and construe, person shall be construed to mean and include an individual. There's your individual. So are you an individual because you're a person? These are questions I've asked myself. These are questions I've pondered and researched and had many sleepless nights trying to figure it out. And the reason why I want to give you a head start is right here is where the title-wide definitions. And if you're ever going to quote the title-wide definitions, I wouldn't just start with person. I wouldn't say 26 U.S. Code Section 7701, person. I would start off with 7701A and quote it exactly as it's written, where it says, when used in this title, were not otherwise distinctly expressed or manifestly incompatible with the intent thereof. One, person. The term person shall be construed to mean and include an individual, trust, estate, partnership. So always include, when you're quoting, I would quote that very important language. When used in this title, were not otherwise distinctly expressed or manifestly incompatible with the intent thereof. And let me tell you why. It's just like my old buddy I used to play golf with. He said, we're not going to lie to you. In other words, we're not otherwise distinctly expressed or manifestly incompatible. There's your hint right there where Congress is saying, hey, we're not going to lie to you, but you better listen very carefully. So we're not otherwise distinctly expressed, and I want you to write that down. Everybody write down. We're not otherwise distinctly expressed. The term person shall be construed to mean an individual. Now there's another definition, and scroll down to A30, Joe, please. Now this section, this subsection of the code is 30 definitions away from the term person. And this is the definition of a United States person. Now, there's a lot of United States persons in the United States. Matter of fact, they're called citizens. Citizen or resident of the United States. I have friends of mine who disagree with me on this, but I've told them many times that one of the days you're going to find out that you're a U.S. person and you're going to like it. So if you were born in one of the 50 states and you've been living in the United States and you're living currently in the United States and you've never been overseas and you've never done anything other than just live right here in the good old USA, you were a U.S. person at birth and you'll be a U.S. person when you die. Now, having said that, can you be a person and a United States person at the same time? Well, what was that little phrase that you jotted down? Were not otherwise distinctly expressed. Here it is, distinctly expressed, United States person rather than a person. And it's not going to just be within this particular section. It's going to be in other sections. For example, Joe, would you do me a favor and go and do a search for section 9-11? I know that sounds kind of wicked because, you know, 9-11, the Twin Towers, George Bush Jr., Cheney, all that stuff. But there's a section 9-11. So remember I asked you to jot down whether or not distinctly expressed,